It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Afraid. Who are you afraid of? It's the bad guys or the guys promising to protect you from the bad guys? And if you give them a monopoly on force, then they always become the bad guys. And I'm just, there are some good guys out there. You know, Mark will tell you, we deal, but it used to be that you had to deal with, it was that one bad cop, that one bad teacher, that one bad judge. That one bad politician, that one. Now it's like you're lucky if you can find one good guy, you know. And I'm looking, and in fact, they're even recruiting the bad. And when you come up against these cases, I mean, it must be triple digits. I mean, hundreds of these cases. That what happens is whenever you look at the record of the officer involved, this is common practice. A lot of times, that's why they get sent out in the desert to patrol the river. And you think you keep them out of trouble, or at least there's not videotape, you know. And the thing is that you look at the records of these people, and they'll do their best to say, no, you're not getting the record. I mean, we had a case with Eric Baudet's case that they wanted the record of the guy, and the judge ordered for the county attorney to give him the record of this guy that claimed, and it's a long story, and he's doing years in jail, and they refused. They said, we're not giving it to you. We're just not. Take it to Supreme Court. Whatever. We're not giving it to you. And they wound up not giving it to him. This is, you know, but they, what happened is he was a rogue cop and they had him, stress disability retirement kind of thing or something. They always protect in their own. Screw the people. The whole promise of government was to give us a trial by our peers. You know, you're innocent until proven guilty. The guy's given the authority. With a badge and a gun, we're there to protect your rights and so on. Is that what's happening? No. I have to call the Phoenix police before we do something to make sure they're aware that we're video, just for their own protection and ours, to get them to do their job. Do you think I would subject these young guys coming here and do it if I know that I can get, look, man, guys, just don't be stupid. Yeah, thanks for letting us know, Ernie. We'll be good this time. We'll let you lawfully carry your firearms at a protest. We'll let you lawfully videotape. We'll let you lawfully do whatever. But you gotta ask. You gotta have an inside. So then you have them. They're waiting. They're waiting for an opportunity to show their stuff. Man, we got this gazillion-dollar agency, or this department of, or this entire new cabinet position branch of government. We got this whole thing for when something happens. We're there to serve you. Just like, I don't know. Give me an example, Mark.
You know, Ernie, I'm going to give you an example in a second. But, you know, it's funny as I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about all the stuff that you and I have done all over the years, all the freedom-related stuff. And, you know, two things just happened in just a few minutes period. Number one, you were talking about the Eric Baudet case. And, you know, you and I both know that that case could have been so different than it was. I mean, we were so close to having that case and me representing him, and that would have been such an interesting deal. But putting that aside for a second.
Well, Mark, his mother didn't want Mark because he wouldn't talk to her, because he knew that if he talked to her, then the other attorney, other side, can pull her in to ask, what did you talk about? Because client attorney privilege doesn't go to the mother.
Which, by the way, is exactly what happened.
Which is exactly what they did, and got another, I don't even want to talk about it. Right, Eric was a good friend. Now he's doing 13, 15 years.
But there was that. There was the Dean Pleasant situation with the Viper Militia. And then the best thing, you're going to love this. I just got an email 5 minutes ago, and you know what it was? It was a mass email from one of the superior courts soliciting me to apply to become a judge.
Oh! Yeah, Mark was a judge for about 10 minutes until he went to hear drug cases, and that became a big issue. That's a whole nother thing.
what a fun story that is, huh? But in any event, yeah, so you point out the primary missions of government, and you know, during the break we were chatting a little bit, and one of the reasons that I like this baseline case so much is because, you know, I see a connection between this baseline case and, you know, the FEMA incident in New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina. Because really, you know, FEMA, to the extent they have any purpose at all, their mission is for stuff like when Hurricane Katrina comes to New Orleans. That's what they're gearing up. That's what they're training for. That is their mission. That's why they have all this money. That's why the government sees fit to steal money from us and then give it to them for this mission. So when the day finally arrived, where Katrina came and just hammered New Orleans and FEMA was needed, what happened?
They turned away anybody that could really help with their own bass boat with an M16, saying, you're not allowed to help these people. And, oh, by the way, we're not.
So here's the Phoenix Crime Lab, the brand new, you know, big million-dollar operation, state-of-the-art. We are set up in our lab to run STR DNA. By the way, we've been taking DNA samples off bad guys, or some of them are bad guys anyways, people convicted of felonies for years. We got a database just in case there happens to be someone like a mass murderer who's out there in a serial kind of way killing people, and we happen to get good police work where we might get a swab with biological material that actually matches the guy's DNA. We got a crime lab with the sample, with knowledge that there's biological evidence, with knowledge that there's a serial rapist, with a request from the detectives that just says, test it. That's all you got to do is test it. And here's their shining moment, right? Imagine how it could have been had they picked the left instead of the right. Had the person at the crime lab in Phoenix just decided instead of the right, let's just pick the left. They picked the left and they solved the case, which at this point is a serial rapist, in 8 people, citizens, innocent victims who were alive, who had families and spouses and kids and lives ahead of them and plans and all that, would still be here walking the earth had the Phoenix Crime Lab simply done what the detectives were in essence begging them to do for months. I mean, one thing I said to CBS when they came and interviewed me yesterday about this case, I said, you know, the detectives really did everything they possibly could have done, short of climbing over the whatever they have there at the Phoenix Crime Lab, breaking open the freezer, taking out the sample that they collected off of the rape victim on the double rape, taking out the DNA swab, which was specifically created for the DNA kit for this very purpose, and running it in the Y-Star database at the lab that exists for this purpose. They begged him. Ernie, I have an email in the information that I gave you that you put up on Freedom's Phoenix. That's, in essence, a detective. This is just one, and I know there's going to be more. Wait till I start deposing people, and I'm going to depose everybody involved in this case is going to answer questions from me about what happened. Could you just imagine what the questions are going to be like when we start asking things like, why didn't you just test it? But I got the email that's begging the Phoenix Crime Lab to test it. In fact, the language in there talks about, you know, the magnitude of all the possibly related cases and the number of victims. Please, pretty please, with a cherry on top, could you just do your job and test the swab?
But there's more behind this. It's they made the case for taking more tax money from us. They made the case for all of these bond increases. They made it, I mean, it was election cycle after election cycle, probably 2 election cycles before this, in a row, that we need more money for this. And making this case before it even started to happen. What if we need to be state of the art, protect you? We can do it. I mean, and then they don't even get into the part that after being victimized, these young women, I mean, they got to go through another, you know, examination of this. I mean, you know.
I know. Can you imagine that side of the story, Ernie? Imagine being one of the double rape victims. You're at the lowest point in your life. You've just been raped by this serial rapist, okay? And you probably haven't even taken a shower yet. And here comes some detective who says, look, we feel terrible about you being raped, by the way. You're victims 5 and 6 in the last month and a half. We feel really bad about it, and we don't want to have to do this. And I'm sorry to have to ask, but could you please take your clothes off and let me, a perfect stranger to you, take these swabs and swab both of your breasts just because we want to test it, because we want to find the guy. Imagine being the rape victim. You say, you know, I really don't want to do this, but if there's a chance that there's DNA on my breast, I don't want anybody else to be raped or worse, murdered. So I'll take off my clothes for you, Mr. Nice Detective. They take the swabs. They get them in the kit. They send them to the lab. They make the request to test them. And Phoenix sticks them in the freezer for 11 months.
Oh, you can see we're not letting this one go. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Pam Gamble, Mark J. Vicker. We're all in this together. We're mature individuals. I mean, we're not youngin' kids that, you know, don't know
anything.
Speak
for yourself, Ernie.
Nah, you're over 40, Holmes. So, you know, my thing is that, you know, we're not the young guy, you know, like we were before. I mean, we've known each other since we were freaking in our 20s, you know, and I'm telling you, man, we went through this learning curve too. We know how this works. And there's so many times that you'll come up against some government agency or an individual, and this is what they'll do. We don't care if we're going to come out behind on this thing because not taken out of my paycheck. I'm the guy that needs to sign and do it. We'll just drag it out. We'll kick the can down. We'll do a bailout. we'll just do it later. You know, the next mayor, the next city council, the next chief of police, the next manager of the lab, the next guy, they'll have to deal with it. They'll drag this out. But we already know that. We go into these things knowing that. We know that they're going to drag out criminal cases. Hey, don't you have to have a timely trial thing going on here? We don't care. It doesn't apply to them. Oh.
We need to do a whole show sometime, Ernie, on your absolutely very sacred, well-protected, firmly established right to a speedy trial.
Which, when does that happen?
That's like the guy in the desert looking for the water who sees that big pond with the palm trees and all that, and he gets there and he's eating the sand. That's like your right to a speedy trial.
They go, here it is, right here, date that. Never mind. Nah, I wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. You know, this is, I don't know what we're supposed to do, who we're supposed to, you know, I mean, we go in with the right intentions. You know, we go in trying to uncover the secrets, expose the lies. We're not just maliciously going out to, you know, slap around somebody just for grins and giggles. It's to have, to create a sense of justice. You know, there's right and there's wrong. There's, you know, things that need it that are seeds of much worse things that come later. If we don't get this stuff fixed now, it's only going to get worse. It's already getting worse. It is the worst cases. It's the most egregious violations of rights. It's what gets us on, you know, Fox and CNN and MSNBC and the newspapers and the local affiliates coming around and doing all that stuff, what we do. And, I had a reporter, it was in the mid-90s, and we were doing up, you know, when we had our newspaper box in front of the federal building, they're trying to, after Oklahoma City bombing, trying to get everybody to take their boxes out from it. And I'm going, are you kidding me? That's the last representation of the First Amendment. You take all representations of the First Amendment away from a federal building, you only leave the second. For the safety of the people working there, I refuse to remove it. Make me. And they're like, God, man, that's a good argument.
Do I remember walking by that federal building, seeing only one dispenser there that was just for the libertarian newspaper?
Yeah, it was ours. We had the newspaper, and what we put in was FIJA material, fully informed jury stuff. We've even had judges go, pay no attention to the orange flyers inside that. You know, so what we did is we printed it out on all these multiple different colors.
You know, Ernie, you and I have slightly different takes on what we're doing here, and. You know, I understand your take, but my take is slightly different. I don't think that we're going to get this ever-increasing, you know, Leviathan-style kind of police state turned around overnight. And we may not do that at all. I don't know. But, you know, like I when I was talking last night to these ASU students, which was partially made up of a group called the Students for Liberty, one thing that I said to them is I sort of see what we're doing as just sort of keeping that little flicker of flame that was started by, you know, guys like Thomas Jefferson and, you know, Sam Adams, Thomas Paine, John Adams, people like that. We're just in a dark time, in a time where everybody loves the government and turns to the government to solve everything and to take care of them from cradle to grave, where the talk of the day is this national health care deal and our ever increasing police presence all over the world for everything. We're keeping this little flame. And somewhere, if Thomas Jefferson was able to know what was going on, he would have a smile on his face knowing that there is a small group of pro-freedom Americans that's out there just beating the drum, trying to keep this concept of, you know, self-ownership and individual liberty and individual responsibility and, you know, this rugged individualism, the stuff that was the made up of what is an American. That's the stuff that defines what an American is. And see, we've lost that definition. Now, we don't have that anymore. I remember last night, there was also a group there called the ASU Normal Group. Okay, that Normal is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And I started with them just like I started when I spoke with the adult Arizona Normal Group. I said, everybody raise your hands who thinks that marijuana should be legal for medical purposes if you have a very bad medical problem. And they all raise their hands and say, yay, 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 yay. And then I went to the extraordinarily radical. Everybody, raise your hand if you think marijuana should be legal just because it's fun to smoke and you want to smoke it and you're an adult. And everybody said, yeah, and the place went crazy. And then I said, now everybody raise your hands if you think methamphetamine ought to be legal for the fun of it. It was like two hands. I said, we need to talk. And then I admonished them. I said, shame on you. Because really, your position is no different than those who say, I like to drink alcohol. By the way, very much more destructive drug than all of the illegal drugs added together, probably times 10. And so how are you different than that guy who likes to drink alcohol to get his buzz going? And he thinks that's perfectly fine. So he thinks alcohol should be legal for everybody, but he doesn't like marijuana. So he decides that you shouldn't get to smoke marijuana. How's he any different than you? You're the same. Shame on you. You don't understand anything about freedom. I said, what impresses me is somebody who says, meth? You're an idiot if you use meth. I would never use meth. Haven't you seen the pictures of people with teeth rotten out of their face? Meth is the dumbest thing that you could ever put in your body. But I got no right to tell another human being, another adult human being, that they can't do stupid things to their own body, that they can't use or abuse their own body. And I said, that's the point that I want you to get, all you one issue. I want to smoke a joint and listen to Bob Marley, normal people. And I wasn't very complimentary to them. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, as they each picked up my legalized methamphetamine article, and I challenged them to read it. And I also challenged them to not be sold just by the second part of the article that talks about things like the black market and, you know, all this really common sense stuff that says, hey, you don't like the stuff, the violence in Mexico, you don't like all the stuff going on at the border. Legalize it and it'll end tomorrow, right? How much violence do we have at the border over alcohol?
Okay, now I got to share this with you. Had this gentleman named Robert Mazur, is author of The Infiltrator, A Secret Life Inside, you know, the Medellin cartel that for 5 years he was inside, and the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. You remember that in the mid-90s, the BCCI? It's all this big thing. Well, he was in on that, had a fake wedding, 80-something of these guys come, and they all arrested him. All right. Well, the bankers that were laundering the money got away and all that kind of stuff. So I have him as a guest. Well, he was, you know, he's FBI, DEA and border and customs and all. He's one of these agent guys, right? I'm going, so what's your solution? Well, we should prosecute the bankers more and this and that and everything. And they don't do any time. And these little guys do 20 years and it's just out of whack. I go, did legalization ever cross your mind? I mean, just decriminalize this. Do you think the drug war, you're just creating profit? And it was so, you should listen to that radio show. And I talked to him about, and he goes, well, what about methamphetamine? I go, you need to talk to my friend Mark Victor. Legalize methamphetamine. And the reasoning is for the same reasons. You know, because then you created a market that's why. What about the children? That's why they're marketing the children, is because of the black market profit. And then what are you going to say? Terrorism? Why do you think the terrorists are making all this money? Because it's illegal, you freaking...
And you know, that's
not
the
smart person,
Ernie. That's the easy argument. What I challenge these students to do is look at the first argument that I call the freedom argument.
Because I can, I own me.
That's
it's
right.
It's whatever I want to put in. That's, you know, I want to snort Clorox. Well, and then I deserve to.
We haven't won anything until we win that argument.
Yeah.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube.
Coming back, so all right, so that's what you get. Now, I got some Boston in here for you too. You got to do some Boston. You know, this whole drug war thing has been at the root of a lot of the problems that we have, and of course now they try and equate, you know, drug war and violence and immigration. It's all part of the same thing or something. It's not. And the enormous profits that are derived from having something being illegal. Of course, we learned this during Prohibition, but you know, so, I mean, what you do, you make your living. Heck, your success as an attorney, certainly financially, is due to the drug war. I mean, how many drug dealers have you represented, or people that got stopped with pot, or somebody that's doing...
I probably make more money off the drug war than anyone other than the drug dealers. And yet, I still take the position that I would give it all up tomorrow. I would make less money tomorrow if it meant more freedom, because it's freedom for people who shouldn't be living in cages. And it's so immoral of our society. How dare we call ourselves the land of the free and incarcerate over 2 million people like we do, so many of them, for just nonviolent drug offenses. And by the way, you know, I don't know if you know about this, Ernie, but we had this... we had this drug deal gone bad situation about a month or so ago, where a Chandler police officer was shot and killed, and it's a triple homicide case. And I don't know if you're aware that I represent one of the co-defendants in that case. I represent Jerry Cochran on that case, and he's one of the guys charged with 3 counts of murder. But, you know, that's in essence a triple homicide case, and that's all the news on that case. But you know what that case is about? It's about it's about marijuana. That's that case, that triple homicide case, would not exist if marijuana was legal. There are 3 people who are now dead who wouldn't be dead if marijuana was legal. And so how do you factor that into the stats? You can't just look at marijuana cases. I think you got to look at the baseline case. I think you got to look at the triple homicide case. People don't realize, and if you said to me, Mark, with everything you know, try to calculate what the real costs are of the drug war. It's not $69 billion. No. Because how do you even figure, you know how many murder cases I've had, that first-degree murder cases that I've tried without a drug charge in them that were totally drug cases? I had one once, I'm sure I told you about it, one of the billions of times I've been on the radio with you, where the issue in the case really was who gets to sell methamphetamine in Scottsdale, the Aryan Brotherhood or the Mexican Mafia. And as a result of that dispute, people were killed and there was a first-degree murder case without any drug charges. So does that go down as a drug case? No. Should it? Absolutely.
Well, I want to ask you this, pal. I mean, you're running for Congress against conservative Trent Franks and whoever Democrats throw in. And, you know, what are the issues that are coming? What is it they're screaming that's an important thing? Elect me because I'm what?
SB 1070, immigration. That's all the anybody ever wants to talk about is immigration.
Isn't that disgusting?
It is. The economy's going completely to hell and nobody cares. They're going to care about a week after the election when suddenly the economy probably takes another tank, the same way it did after Ron Paul dropped out. And the 401ks basically got sliced in half a couple months later, and suddenly every reporter wanted to talk to him about something that they had absolutely no intention of talking to him about during the election, which was the economy.
The reporters are just, they just do whatever somebody tells them to do.
Don't get me started on the immigration policy. I've been looking for some extra time in my schedule to come up with another article, and I got a working title. And the title is Mexicans, the New Jews.
Yep.
No.
Aren't you Jewish?
Yes, I am.
Golden sombrero, start wearing those.
But you know, it's true. I mean, it just pains me to hear these morons make these arguments that, oh, the economy is so bad and all these crime problems and all this thing because these people from Mexico are coming across the border to work these little jobs and do exactly what our families wanted to do, which is pursue happiness. You know, if we really were the land of the free, we should be welcoming these people. Immigration did nothing but help our country. And, you know, I got into this discussion at my gym either this morning or yesterday morning. It's hard for me to remember because I'm there at 5 a.m., you know, and I'm barely awake. But this person said to me, well, Mark, I kind of agree with you in concept, but, you know, they should just follow the rules and come legally. And I said, do you have any real understanding of really what it takes for somebody who is a Mexican citizen to come here legally? I mean, you know how many people have come through my office, and what I hear is it's more than a 10-year wait. More than a 10-year wait, and you need to drop about $5,000 to $10,000 on an immigration attorney. I mean, really, Ernie, would your family have been able to come here? I know my family wouldn't have been able to come here, and I can prove it to you because I've got the manifest from 1904 when my great-grandfather, Max Victor, showed up on a boat, and guess how much money he had with him in his pocket that he declared? $10. He said, here I am, Max Victor. I'm a tin worker. I got $10. I'm coming in from Russia. Will you have me? They probably said, oh, what's your name again, Max? Okay, here's a shot for immunization. Good luck. Bye-bye. That's about what he had to go through. So to make the argument that realistically, I mean, the barriers for these people to come in legally and jump through all the hoops, it's so high, that it's pretty much impossible. And it is really, it's more big government that people who are for freedom should never, ever support.
What is the argument that is probably you think would be the most persuasive on the other side? You know, because I've heard it all. I mean, we've had them at the Freedom Summit.
On the other side of the immigration argument?
Yeah.
Well, the argument that I hear more than any other time, which is the only argument that I ever hear with any validity at all, which is, and in fact, some of my good pro-freedom friends have made this argument to me, which is, Mark, I agree with everything you're saying, but, you know, if they come here, they get all these social programs and all this stuff, the welfare state. And my response to that is, you're right, that's terrible. I wouldn't give illegals any benefits whatsoever at all. And it's a little footnote I would hang in there,
anybody else.
Or any citizens, people who are perfectly here, legal, and born here, and lived here their whole lives, generation after generation. I wouldn't give them any benefits either. So can we agree nobody gets benefits? And that should be our position as people who are pro-freedom, that nobody gets benefits. Because what is benefits defined? Benefits is the right to stick your hand in someone else's pocket and take out their money and use it for your own purpose. Who the heck has that right? Nobody has that right.
You know, that doesn't even hold up to me. I mean, you know, I mean, that's, you know, probably someone that took a moment to think about it. You know, they would say, well, they're, you know, they're getting access to public schools. They're getting access to healthcare.
And by the way, the cost of the illegals getting access to this stuff, it pales in comparison to the cost of the legals getting this stuff.
Now, see, the thing is that I'm going, okay, what is that number? Doesn't care. They don't care. That's not the point.
Right.
And I'm going, you know, I don't care if you're from Montana. I mean, you know, you're stealing from me. I, you know, let's take care of the, well, until we can get the welfare state done, we need to shut this. It has no impact whatsoever in all the stuff that's happening. In fact, they're paying into the Social Security system and not getting benefit for it. You know, they're paying and not getting a refund. I mean, you know, I'm going, who are you kidding? But that's not what they want. I tell you the other argument. We had the Freedom Summit. It was our, I think it was the 06 Freedom Summit we did when we were in Casa Grande. Frosty Wooldridge, you know, came up there and debated Bumper Hornberger and Terry Bressey and all these guys. And Frosty made the point that, you know, well, it's a cultural thing. You know, they're changing our culture. And I'm going, well, I thought our culture was freedom. I mean, you know, can we get back to that? Well, no, I guess not. And that's why they come here. You know, they want prosperity. They want to be able to, I go, that's the kind of people I want. Well, the thing is that they no, we have to stop. And he was advocating, I go, you know, you're talking checkpoints and you're talking national ID, right? Well, if that's what it takes.
Ugh.
And that's where they're at. And that's what we got.
And, you know, that's fine. If you want to take that position, all I ask is do me one favor.
Let me
ask. Don't. No, yeah, right. But you know, all right, maybe ask more than one favor. But one of my favorite favors to ask, if you're going to take positions like that, do me a favor. Just don't say you're for freedom. Don't call yourself a libertarian. Don't say you're for freedom, because you're not. You're for big, giant, unbelievable, Nazi-like government. That's, you should at least call it what it is.
You know, this is the first election cycle since 1990 that I haven't been involved in.
Well, congratulations, Ernie. Maybe we should throw you a party something.
I'm not playing this time.
You finally
know,
had
a lot
enough.
Of reasons,
huh?
For a lot of reasons. I'm just, you know, maybe I'll do it again. We'll go local. I just want to bring it back. I'm always, it starts local and then it gets statewide and then it gets, you know, federal offices and run for Senate and all this kind of stuff and Congress. And I'm just like, you know, I'm going to get local. You know, I'm just, this is really, it's, that was all for making a point and having an audience and so on. But the solutions are going to be local. I mean, it's going to be, man, we just need to, you know, survive, you know? And so I got to ask Powell, you know, when we come back, you know, I want to hear about, on the campaign trail, you know, what the issues really are, other than immigration, of course. But, I mean, are you able to inject anything into teaching somebody anything? And can you use the immigration issue to do that? Well, we're going to find out what's going on the campaign trail from a congressional candidate's perspective, and we come back in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock, Truth, Justice, and What Used to Be the American Way, whatever the heck that was. You know, on the campaign trail, we got Powell out there. You've gone to a lot of these different forums and so on where you have these, you know, different, you know, run for county attorney. They're running for attorney general. They're running for governor. They're going, oh, you know, it's tonight is the debate. Barry Hess is doing against Brewer and Goddard tonight at Channel 8.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that's, I just remembered. Just I was talking to him. Yeah, see, that's how out of it I am. I'm just like, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like watching the, you know, Charlie Brown cartoon. Wah, 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 wah. You know, I'm just, the libertarians are the only ones that have anything decent to say. And then everybody knows that they're right, but they don't care. That's not the horse they bet on. And they're looking for the winner. So tell me, I mean, you know, there's got to be some other issues out there, something that you can teach these people using.
Usually I try to basically take the bull by the horns and basically introduce people to the concept of non-aggression principle, the idea that you're not to initiate force on other people. And I basically go try to teach libertarianism. I use what little venues and opportunities I have to do it. To basically teach that, and free market, which does come up with the economics.
Oh, I got to tell you this, what we're doing. Ben Quayle is running in District 3 or something against Michael Schoen.
That's correct.
Okay, Michael Schoen is a Libertarian candidate for Congress. It's the second time he's done it. And he is heir to the U-Haul fortune, okay? So he has some cash. You know, he's all right. Or he's a son. I don't know how much he's got. He lives in Paradise Valley, and he's not starving. Let's put it that way, okay? So he's not for just wasting a bunch of money. He knows he's not going to win. He tries to keep it under the 5,000 limit. He just wants to make sure he gets his thing out there. He's sane. He doesn't want to. He doesn't care. He don't want to take a pay cut and go to Washington. I mean, you know, it's, you know, he's good. But what happens is that Dan Quayle's son won the Republican nomination, the VP to Daddy Bush. All right. So this is the idea we come up with. The guys are already doing tomorrow. They're making the stencil. We're going to be doing these signs that have a stencil of a quail bird, you know, like a Partridge Family band kind of thing, right? So they have a quail and then a littler quail, you know, so we have the big quail, little quail. And then you have the slogan is just another bird in the bushes.
Oh.
Or in with the bushes or whatever like that. I'm going, oh, that's got to hurt. I mean, that's that. The whole campaign is just worth doing that, you know. So, you know, will people forget that? No. I mean, what does that mean? Just another neocon. Heck, he has his financial contributors, you know, Rumsfeld. I mean, give me a break. So as you're teaching these people, you know, about just libertarianism, are you getting applause? Are they embracing that? Are they going, yeah, what you said, but I'm going to vote for this guy anyway? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, they're not jeering me, but I don't know how much of an impact I'm making. What really kind of disappoints me is that I really was sort of hoping to make inroads with the Democratic people, even though this is Trent Frank's Republican district, et cetera. You get the Democratic Party people showing up, and I always figure, yeah, it's nice to recruit from the left rather than the right, because the right.
They just stopped voting.
So it's been kind of disappointing when you get into the drug war, et cetera, things that you'd think they'd be all for, and you find out that they're kind of wishy-washy on it. It's basically what you're talking about, the methamphetamine. It's like, oh, we can't have that. And it's like, so I just don't understand the freedom part.
I am very... I've always been optimistic that the next generation's coming up and that people, when they get the, how do you unlearn the truth? So what happened was, is that this last election cycle, I saw so much movement in the youth and the people that were woken up by the Ron Paul Revolution. And what Ron Paul and Campaign for Liberty and those guys, they didn't anticipate. And I told them, I mean, they were trying to get me to go in and do that. I go, you're missing it. You're not understanding. This next generation, they're not about, they don't even give a crap about voting. That was not what this was about. They're just going to create their own society. They're hippies with understanding, man. They're hippies with, you know, with experience and communication and instant sharing of ideas and concepts with each other. They're hippies with video cameras. I mean, you know, they know. You know, I tell you what they are. They're hippies with freaking Ludwig von Mises' understanding of the economy. That's what's going on. They understand it's over. So how do we, what do we do? I take every opportunity for us to highlight these things because they make a point. It's always about making a point. I remember ex-Congressman Sam Steiger, he used to have a radio show. Whenever my name came up, man, he'd get all mad. Hey, he's just an opportunist. And I'm going, yeah, for freedom. That's what we all do. You know, Mark has a lot of opportunities that we get to have fun with. You know, Powell gets to do what he wants, running for Congress and being senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix. I get to share with you and do the other stuff that we do. But I tell you what, as much as we try to enjoy this, as much as we try to make sense of everything, as much as we try to, you know, have fun or keep it lively or educate you or spread the truth, you know, there's pain involved. The fact that we even have to do it. Time taken away from our families, time taken away from other things I'd like to do. Time. What's the value of that? What's the value of freedom that we don't have? You know, we can relish in the freedom that we do have and what little bit's left over. And, you know, the jackboot on our throat isn't have as much weight on it as it is in other countries. But there's a jackboot on my throat. So I'm what do we do? What do we advocate? So that's why we work together as a team on this stuff. And I'll tell you, there's been times that we've been targeted. You know, people come, Mark, oh, man, they've definitely come after you on several occasions trying to get your bar card. You're not allowed to complain. You're not allowed to go after the system itself. You're not allowed to. This baseline thing, man, that puts you in some crosshairs. Are you ready for this?
You know, it's what I do, Ernie. That's I make noise and I use the system and I say things and do things. You know, in this case, by the way, I am so clearly on the right side of this one that I think people are going to see that. I think people are going to very clearly see.
Well, I know the media has been doing their own event. You know, a lot of the paperwork and stuff that we get and accumulated and, you know, has come from media information requests. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, been exposed. You know, they're like, you know, this is all we've been accumulating for a long time on this because everybody, we all had different contacts. We have different people that we know. We know people that are know people that have ex-roommates, former girlfriends that, you know, work in the whatever. So this stuff is coming out because there's a lot of people that it needs to come out. It's like a WikiLeaks thing.
The train hasn't even left the station yet. No, we're just gassing up right now.
Yeah, it's already, I already see where this goes. And it's so diversified, taking out any one person or even you or me or anything isn't going to change what's going to happen. It's just going to make it worse. So they just need to, you know, come to Jesus and just, you know, do this come clean thing and beg forgiveness. Because you got guys like Powell that can read the reports. He's like, I can see what's going on. I understand. So this is, I'm hoping that in the end we can learn something from this and we start taking our activism local. I encourage the audience to do the same thing. Wherever you are around the country, you know, I know we're in Portland, Salt Lake City, and Memphis, and North Carolina, and Florida, and, you know, Tennessee, wherever, you know, Texas, that you guys, you know, I just want you to know that there are people out here that are doing the fight for the right reasons, but it's uncomfortable because we understand the supremacy of the individual. And if you don't take that position, you're kind of without a rudder. You're just around floating. You're going to wind up in the current and going wherever they're taking you. Because if you got the power of a principle, of an understanding of the proper role of government, then it makes it easier for you to take and select these cases and make a point that will stick. How do you unlearn the truth?
Well, you know, Ernie, the bottom line here is we're on the right side of this issue, okay? We are on the right side because what we're advocating is freedom. What we're advocating is not coercing your neighbor. And how can that be a bad thing? I mean, at the end of the day, that's really all we're saying. We're saying that we think that our society can be just fine and we can be prosperous and we can have an orderly, happy society without any need to force our neighbors into doing things they don't want to do. Right? And that's the end of the day. That's what we're saying. And we know that we're right about that. Okay? So we're having arguments with them where they're saying, no, we need to force our neighbors to do this or that or the next thing because it's so important because they don't understand. They're dumb. They're this, they're that. It's for their own good. Whatever. We're saying, you know, maybe you're right about that. I don't know. I don't reach that question because we, as a group of pro-freedom people, we are men of peace.
And if you can persuade somebody, you know, that was the Christ thing. You know, it's, I'm the light. You know, let me show you, it's voluntary persuasion, witness, parable, testimony, teaching. It was never he went to Caesar and say, make him be your brother, his brother's keeper. You know, go put a spear to that guy and make him do something. It was all about voluntarism.
It's what we said at the beginning, Ernie. What we're doing it for Thomas Jefferson. We're keeping the flame burning through the dark times.
Because there's another generation coming. Pal, give out your website. They go check out your goodies there.
It's gammilforcongress.com, GAMMILL, for Congress.
Gamble with F-O-R?
F-O-R.
GambleForCongress.com and see what a libertarian does going up against the big boys. You know, this is what we do, and you get to share it. Well, we're glad we got to share with you today because, you know, we need to spread some truth with you. How are you going to unlearn that? I don't know. I don't think you should try. We'll talk to you tomorrow.